It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 18th day of July, 2023. It is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb, too. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe round, and whatever time it is when you're listening to the podcast. If you're listening to the podcast, please accept my gratitude, the entire community's gratitude. Thanks for being part of this long-running conversation. I really appreciate it, and I hope you get a lot out of it, too. And if you do, please like and subscribe to the podcast wherever, whatever platform you're on, so that you'll be in, you'll be notified every time a new episode goes up, and that usually happens, as noted previously, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, etc. If you're listening live, though, well, feel free to pop on over to headon.live, click on chat room if you've never been to the chat room before. Well, you can be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that takes place again, etc., etc., etc. You get the idea. And where if you pop by right now, you will be greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Squeaky and Theo and Tennessee Walter. Welcome, welcome, one and all. Glad to see y'all. Thanks for being here before the tardy bell. Hi, I'm Robin. And it is, in fact, the Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, a day when we celebrate, not exactly celebrate, take note of. I've been going back and forth with that for years now. Take note of manifestations of Titanic. Let's go see the Titanic wreck. Titanic. Right-wing intellect, okay? And we will get to that right quick. And but just before that, however, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so consequently, we say thank you to our 18th day of the month subscribers. And in particular, that means thank you so much to Charlene in Rogues Island, and thank you to Grace, and thank you to Joy in Ann Arbor. Thank you so very much all for being part of how this program stays on the air. If you'd like to be a subscriber, it's very easy. Just go to headon.live. There's a PayPal interface right there, and if you just put in your $10, well, you know that you're out a little less than 15 cents per hour of programming every month. Yeah, it'll come out on the same day of the month every time. If you want to do, Patreon, that's on the contribute tab. All of it helps keep things going. We've been in a deeper fundraising hole, but this one's deep enough. We finished off last Monday. Before Monday was over, this Monday, this yesterday, So now we're working on a week ago, last Tuesday. The fundraising goal stands at $1,800. $1,800. If we can knock out $300 this evening, we'll have last Tuesday finished before prayer meeting Wednesday, and we will stay only a week behind instead of more than a week behind. Okay? Does that make any sense? I hope it does. Best I can do. Well, I guess we know what we're going to be talking about. Oh, Scary Jerry, that's very good. Scary Jerry just sent me a note and said, I'm embarrassed it took this long to render this. It was right there. It is, of course, a picture of Nitwit Nero, AI, with his skin done up in all green, and a witchy hat on, and a black suit, and it's a witch!
It's a witch hunt. Definitely a witch hunt.
Right. Well done, Scary Jerry. But like I said, I had a feeling I knew what we'd be talking about, I mean, from the moment, yeah, because Nitwit Nero can't keep his mouth shut. Oh, program note. At the beginning of the second hour of the program, I'm just tickled pink. I'm going to be joined by Stacy Pace, who is a certified nurse practitioner and a life-saving caregiver to a lot of people. And she's going to talk about anything and all things related to what it's like to live in the... I complain about the conditions here in almost level West by Coal Manchinistan. But realistically, to be a caregiver for a marginalized community in the Deep South where Stacy is monumentally worse, and she is in the fight of her life, and for her patients' lives. And so, since we're kind of limited in how we can go about taking your comments and whatnot, send them to me via email, please. Just message me on from headon.live if you want to, and that'll make things easier. Stacy will probably be on the stress line, and you know, I went outside and invoked all the deities, all the goddesses, so that the stress line will be a good quality transmission, right? So that's coming up in the second hour, but like I said. Once I got up and saw what was happening, well, okay, billable, I think you're right. It's a visual on radio, so I don't think of it in those terms, but billable Rick said, no cowbell for Scary Jerry for his AI rendition of Donald Witch Hunt? I regret the error. I do. So, this feels like peak... this feels like peak Nitwit Nero Titanic intellect.
He's got a very big brain. Very big. It's huge. That's what Mommy used to tell me when I was on the potty, learning not to poop myself when I was 12. Oh, you've got a very big brain, Donald. A very big brain. Who's my big boy who can potty all by himself? She'd say.
Yes. So apparently, Nitwit Nero got a target letter from Special Counsel Jack Smith. Now, a target letter is a very specific official Department of Justice document. And what it means is, it's basically, hi. Hey, Donald, it's Jack. I'm going to jack you up. Sorry, couldn't resist. You're a target of a grand jury investigation. We believe you've committed a crime, the grand jury does. But if you'd like to come and have a little chit-chat, with the grand jury, you're perfectly welcome to do so. You got 4 days, bitch. He certainly did lose his shit. As if anyone would be surprised. I mean, he took to that rickety-ass, falling-apart, weird little social media platform.
Trump Social?
And hit the caps lock. Hit the caps lock with his strangely fat thumbs on his oddly tiny hands. And proved again that him having defense counsel is impossible. And that he is a lawyer's nightmare. And that he is essentially unrepresentable. Because he will not, as we have noted here on a number of occasions, he will not follow advice of counsel. He will not remain silent. Because remember, Truth Social, Trump Social, doesn't enjoy some sort of protected status just because it's one of his dodges. So anything he says on Truth Social can and will be used against him in a court of law. You know, the Miranda warning. I wish Precious Princess Iwanka, my daddy Trump Kushner, could wear a t-shirt with a big slogan emblazoned across her bazooms that says, "You have the right to remain silent, daddy. Why don't you fucking try it sometime?" Then maybe he'd look. Because, of course, he is a sickening perv. But, no, instead, he went on this goddamn Truth Social. And Nitwit Nero immediately tweeted that he is,
Jack Smith is deranged.
So really, if he has four days to show up and talk to the grand jury,
I want to talk to him. I just can't get there that quickly. I can't hitch old Dobbin to the Shay and get all the way from my lavish estate at Mar-a-Lardass all the way to Washington, D.C., the swamp which I drained.
And counsel for the parking garage or whoever the hell it is sitting there going, no. Donald, you can't testify to the grand jury. You're going to get indicted. And if you testify to the grand jury, they're going to indict you for lying to the grand jury, too. Donald! Damn it. Mama always told me I could have been a piano player in a whorehouse and not a lawyer. She said I could have found honest work, and here I am.
I probably can't get there. I'm so busy. I've got several golf days.
Bilbo Rick says, give yourself a cowbell for hi, Donald, it's Jack, I'm going to jack you up. By the way, when will Trump hit the road, Jack, so that we can all be rid of that meddlesome grifter? Well, I've got some stuff along those lines, and it, you know, devoutly to be wished, but look, there are people saying, you know, a former Arkansas governor, and man who rose to prominence via his participation in the great cleanest hunt of the 1990s. I'm talking about Asa Hutchinson. He said,
If he is indicted by the grand jury, he should consider that being ineligible to serve as president of the United States and should drop out of the race immediately.
Oh, Asa, you live in a different era. You wanted Bill Clinton to resign from office, too, while you were eagerly chasing after his zipper. But in point of fact, from where we stand, at least as I understand it, the one thing you don't want Nitwit Nero to do is drop out of the race. Because that clears the way for Monkey Up, maybe Chris Christie, Nimrata Haley, who is so brilliant she was once hoodooed into thinking that she was talking to the president of Poland about an imaginary island nation called Bonomo, when in fact she was talking to the Morning Zukru of Moscow 98.8, the Volger Boltman. Yeah, we don't want that. We want Nitwit Nero shitting up the process as long as he possibly can. But there's other things that have to come into play, too. For instance, the no-labels assholes have to be kept off the ballot. Because they're actually funded by shadowy Trump money. We know that, right? Because they are. Because the whole thing is a shadow effort to get Trump back into the White House by draining votes away from Joe Biden. Who, by the way, remains the most progressive president this country may ever have had. Who, as Marginal Trailer Queen pointed out when she was speaking to Toilet Paper USA, wants to continue the work of FDR and LBJ, which, if you're not a billionaire in this country, is a pretty damn good thing. ABC News is also reporting that Special Counsel Jack Smith has sent a target letter to a staffer for Nitwit Nero, saying that he might have perjured himself talking to investigators last May. ABC News said it signals Smith's growing interest in the Trump Organization's handling of the surveillance footage and potential efforts to avoid sharing it with investigators. ABC News knows who the target letter recipient is, and they reached out to the individual who wrote back to Nitwit Nero's former employee and said,
"It's none of your business."
No, it's the grand jury's business. Apparently this person is lawyered up and knows better than to run their mouth to the media. But the former staffer is a true believer and said that
it's a witch hunt.
And the reactions from people like, Kevers McCarthy, the weaker speaker, the man of silly putty. He said, well, it certainly seems like the government's being weaponized. I guess you can expect that with a Biden administration. Oh, you sack of horse dung. That's actually insulting to horse dung. And somebody stuck a microphone in front of Jim Jacketoff Jordan's face and asked him what he thought. DOJ just keeps it up. I mean, for who knows how long, the whole double standard and why it's ridiculous or what they're doing, it's wrong, and it's why, like, what, 4 in 5 Americans think there's a two-tiered system of justice. They see it.
They see that, but Jim Jacket Off Jordan didn't see when young men were coming to him when he was assistant wrestling coach at the Ohio State University and said, Coach, the team doctor's been raping the shit out of us. Could you maybe do... What? Did I hear something? I thought I heard something. No, I didn't hear anything. No, he didn't hear that. He didn't see that. Not at all. Steve Cohen, Democrat from Memphis, media asked him whether he should be a target of the grand jury investigation into January the 6th and the terrorist attack therein. Steve Cohen said, yeah, he should be. I said, well, what about what Trump's saying about his DOJ only coming after him because his poll numbers are going up? And Steve Cohen said, well, that's typical Trump, isn't it? Whereas Representative Jamal Bowman from New York said, you know, he's full of crap. Steny Hoyer said it's baloney. They're going after him because he's done bad things. I mean, you know, it's as simple as that. You know, he does things. He's so arrogant and so convinced of his own, I can shoot people from Fifth Avenue and people would not care, that he does things with impunity. And that's not the country we are. You know, we hold accountable wrongdoing. Now, he has a right to argue his case, obviously, but that's why he acts outrageously and it's surprised people respond. Meanwhile, over in the Feedum carcass, the chair, Scott Perry, said, it's all the same stuff. The federal government, DOJ, justice system, so-called, being used as a political weapon. Now, I'm not going to characterize every single person at DOJ, but obviously the leadership, the people making decisions on the kind of cases. And so that's the current MAGA-approved talking point.
It's only because my poll numbers are going up.
Jerry Nadler, ranking minority member on House Judiciary, said, we all saw it. It's been obvious for a long time he was behind the insurrection. And the phone call to Brad Raffensperger and everything else he did, I'm not at all surprised. I'm surprised it took so long. And then Nadler countersunk the nail, saying, the Republican Party, the people in the House, some people supported the insurrection. Ryan Shrinky Zinke, who at one point was, Secretary of the Interior? Until he had to hightail it out of there when he got caught being a grifter? Zinke said, well, I'm not surprised. There are high hurdles for Trump. Part of the reason his poll numbers are going up is because Republicans are pushing back against DOJ overreach. Look, he's being hit by so many different sides. At some point, it just becomes theater. I'd say to my friends, get a good bag of popcorn and enjoy the show. Meanwhile, Ronnie the Candyman Jackson, former White House physician to Nitwit Nero, and now so MAGA he's crazier than a sprayed roach, representing a district down in Texas, said, honestly, I haven't heard about it. Yeah. So Nitwit Nero was trying to get out in front of it so he could grift on it a while. And one hopes, you know, when he's convicted, that there will be a fine of something approaching every damn dollar that he has raised. With these witch hunt grifts and his election, rigged election lies. I mean, a girl can dream. Don Beyer of Virginia did bring some more detail to it. He said, on the one hand, there are so many Democrats who would rather have Trump as the nominee because he's so damaged and we know his core base is very, very loyal, but that's 20% or 24%. He's chased off so many independents so Biden could beat Donald Trump. On the other hand, if he wins, it would be terrible. So on the off chance a Republican wins, you'd rather have somebody who's sensible. Oh, Congressman Beyer, put down the pipe, honey. That would be a terribly messy situation. There are no sensible Republicans. Apparently, like a certain Jethro Tull song, Representative Beyer is, to a certain extent, living in the past. Beyer added, there's clearly a bright line between what prosecutors in the Department of Justice, the wheels of justice, are about and what the political engineers would think. I don't even know what that means. Political engineers? Is he talking about the maggots who jump up and down and bark and grunt and hoot and bray and shriek and moan about weaponized systems of justice and the like? Is that it? I don't know. But we may actually get... There's a scenario where, given the four-day window, that's Thursday, the grand jury could be voting, could stay around and vote on Friday. Or if Thursday's their big day every week, vote the following Thursday. In other words, if there's going to be an indictment, it may happen in under or very little over a week. And let's see, a couple of emails. First of all, Ralph says, hey, I've got a $25 Target letter challenge. Let's celebrate Nitwit Nero receiving a Target letter, and Ralph's will match the first 25 bucks that comes in, and that'll mean that we are $50 toward having last Tuesday fully funded. Thank you, Ralph's. Thank you. Stephen New York with a couple of remarks. Continue the policies of FDR and LBJ? Yes, please. Yeah, I think a lot of us said, yeah, sounds good to me. Two tiers of justice, Steve adds, exactly. Some people get prosecuted for looking away when the team doctor's buggering college athletes, and some don't get prosecuted. Like Jim Jacket Off Jordan. Oh, okay, Lee in New York says, Nitwit Nero does not open Target letters.
I shop at Walmart. Can I use your credit card?
Oh. Well played, Lee. Oh, true. Lee also observes Nitwit Nero can be silent. He proved that while the Capitol was being attacked on January 6, 2021. You're not wrong. And because Lee's on a roll. Big brain, Nitwit Nero's brain is so big. How big is it? His belly has all the extra. Lee will be here all week. Don't try the veal, and don't forget to tip your server. I guess that would be me. So there's a lot more stuff out there for us. And in conjunction with the typical venal larcenous nature of Nitwit Nero, Darlene in Connecticut sent me along this little piece from The Guardian. And it's, you know, you read the headline, and this just, you know, this is how it is in the time in which we live. You go, well, of course. Treasures lent by Israel for White House event stranded at Mar-a-Lago. Really, Guardian? Stranded? Stranded? Are the White House treasures and antiquities peddling a coconut bicycle to power the AM radio that the professor keeps fixed and working? The Guardian is working from an article in Haaretz that says that antiquities that include ancient ceramic oil lamps, part of what Israel calls its national treasures collection, they were loaned to the United States for a Hanukkah candle lighting event at the White House 4 years ago. 4 years ago! The entire transaction was approved by the guy who was director of the Israel Antiquities Authority, a fellow by the name of Israel Hassan. It happened in 2019. And the Israelis have never seen them since. Oh, no. I just heard a distant rumble of thunder. I guess it's that time of year, isn't it? So the standard disclaimer applies. If I happen to be mid-syllable on something and the program goes poof, you'll know that once again Appalachian Power's rickety coal-fried ancient technology power grid has run under the bed like a terrified chihuahua and is quaking there under like it's trying to poop a peach pit. Just a standard warning. Turns out, though, that the White House didn't use the oil lamps because a determination was made that the lamps may have actually been purloined from the West Bank. The occupied West Bank. It was a clay candelabra. And it was supposed to be shipped back. I can imagine it's quite fragile. I don't know how much bubble wrap that would require. And with the arrival in 2020 of COVID-19, they didn't move because U.S. officials felt like using usual shipping channels would not be the best idea. So Israel Hassan, the Israeli official, interviewed by Haaretz, said a guy named Saul Fox, who is a big-time donor to the Antiquities Authority and was at the 2019 Hanukkah celebration with Nitwit Nero.
Hala Negila, I don't know any of the rest of the words.
Fox was asked to take care of the items, but that didn't work out either. No. Somehow or another, they wound up at Mar-a-Lago. As the Guardian notes, no one really knows how. And you wind up with statements like that when things are purloined in the dark and still of the night. So the Israelis are now, even high up, saying, could we have our precious antiquity back?
What antiquity? I don't know about any antiquities. Well, do you know about any antiquities?
I don't know nothing about no antiquities. The current director of Israel Antiques Authority, a guy named Eli Esposito, well, he's been talking to the Israeli Foreign Affairs Ministry, the Strategic Affairs Ministry, and the former U.S. Ambassador to Israel, David Friedman, saying, yeah, come on, please, a little help. And even the Israelis are afraid to get too sideways with Nitwit Nero because, today they were abasing themselves, saying, it's a misunderstanding. We woke up too late to the problem. That's like getting your house burglarized and saying we did not have death rays at every door. It's on us. We weren't aware that the burglar would be able to pick the lock and come in and take the TV. So sorry. We're sorry it wasn't a better TV. Oh. But by the same token, anyone who is surprised by this, raise your hand. And even though this is radio, I will see hands raised. And there are no hands raised because no one is surprised. So, some other news. Good for Dana Nessel. I'm sure at hearing her name, Joy in Ann Arbor is going, go girl! Because she is a badass woman. She made an announcement today that she's filed charges against, she's the Attorney General of Michigan. She's filed charges against 16 people who signed phony baloney paperwork saying that Nitwit Nero won 2020's election in Michigan in an attempt to overturn the election. It represents the first time that fake electors have been charged, and there were a shit ton of them. Remember, the actual wife of the senior most Supreme Court Justice, that would be Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Fappy Thomas, she encouraged fake electors in Wisconsin. And so 16 people, the 16 who are charged in Michigan, met in the basement of the state Republican headquarters. Sounds like a case of conspiracy to me. And they signed a bunch of certificates saying that they were, quote, the duly elected and qualified electors for president and vice president of the United States of America for the state of Michigan. Dana Nessel added, that was a lie. They weren't the duly elected and qualified electors, and each of the defendants knew it. Oh, that stings. Each of the 16 are being smacked with 8 felony counts. 8! In her statement, Attorney General Nessel said, the false electors' actions undermine the public's faith in the integrity of our elections and not only violated the spirit of the laws enshrining and defending our democracy, but we believe also plainly violated the laws by which we administer our elections in Michigan and peaceably transfer power in America. Of the 16, it includes the GOP co-chair in Michigan, Michonne Maddock. And, oh, she's a bag of cats. and GOP Republican National Committee woman for Michigan, Kathy Burden. Michelle Lundgren was also charged. Well, she talked to WDIV, said, "I thought I was signing an attendance sheet for the meeting. I didn't even know what an elector was, let alone a fake elector." I'm sorry, I just love that a little bit. I do. Fake electors in Georgia may be facing criminal charges. And Fannie Willis has said that, yeah, she's going to present criminal charges in August. We're going to stop being able to count Nitwit Nero's indictments on one hand. All right, Billable.
Robin, stop putting your cats in the bag.
I didn't say they were my cats or in the bag, or that I keep cats in a bag. We don't keep cats in a bag. Sometimes Socks or Kyle will hang out with me back here, but they're definitely not in a bag. Socks is out playing in the yard lately. He discovered something new and terrifying. Socks did. Tiny dinosaurs. Guinea fowl. They're some neighbors, and they wandered into our yard, and Socks took one look at it and was like, "What the hell are you? You may be too big for..." But he's a brave boy, Socrates is. Very much so. I thought I was signing an attendance sheet. Thank you, Samson. Thank you so very much indeed. Samson in Wisconsin has kindly met Ralph's target letter challenge. So only $250 to go to finish last Tuesday. And wow, would it be awesome if we can. I mean, just, I mean, you know what my life has been like lately. I've been on the road to Tennistan the last three weekends of July, and it looks like I will probably be on the road to Tennistan every weekend of July. And getting caught up with fundraising is a big part of that because, well, you know, those of you who are parents, you know, you'll do whatever you can to give your kids a fighting chance. And so they have a home up in northeast Tennistan. And Annette and I are doing all we can to make it possible for them to set up housekeeping. And my precious little granddaughter starts school this fall. And she's going to start first grade down in Tennistan. And that means being able to transport them down. And a lot of other stuff. Takes a lot to raise babies. Playpens and bouncers and toys and clothes and... some point in time, it all has to go down there. So, and on top of that, you know, keep up with everything that keeps the program going here, and I'm doing everything in my power not to miss any programs. So every little bit of help, every bit of help is wonderful help. I'm kind of fascinated by this story that's coming up next, that I have here next. It is something that I've been talking about for literally years. That is suddenly, well, at least somebody's, not the, well, what I mean is, you know, for years we've referred to Nitwit Nero as Soak, S-O-A-K, son of a Klansman. And so for some reason or another, some booker over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, the one who books guests for that life support system for a haircut, the Hannity job, decided to book Dr. Cornel West to talk with Hannity. And it didn't go well for Hannity. You could even say that it went poorly. Now, Cornel West is a third-party candidate for president. Okay. But lo and behold, and the multimillionaire for-profit media have loathed bringing up the fact that Nitwit Nero's daddy was a Klansman. Maybe it's a sin of the fathers kind of thing, or the Constitution saying that treason will not work, corruption of the blood, that kind of thing. But the Hannity job wanted to play that game of Joe Biden was friends with John Stennis of Mississippi, and Joe Biden was friends with Strom Thurmond. He's a racist. He said that to the wrong guy. Meaning Cornel West.
You were talking about Brother Trump himself and Biden's connection to Stennis, Biden's connection to Thurmond. We know Brother Trump's, his own father has been tied to the Klan. Trump's language about black people calling...
Professor, I've never heard that allegation. Yeah. Never once.
Of Trump,
now, I know
Trump
Joe Biden said he didn't want
to. Cornel West speaks an iota of truth, and the Hannity job has to start stammering and stuttering and trying to make sure that Emery and Marvelline sitting back down there in their trailer at the Ballerina Swan Lake Country Club and Trailer Court in their matching Barca loungers don't hear Cornel West say, yeah, Trump's daddy was a Klansman. I've never heard that. Really?
Those places to be integrated in Queens, and be racial jungles.
No, my brother, you got to do a little reading. We won't go into all of that now, but I'm not going to say the son has to take responsibility of the father. Oh, no, we have empirical evidence of that in terms of not just how he treated black people in Queens, but also the fact that he took him to Klan rallies. But this is in the history. But we're not talking about his father. God bless his soul. We're talking about Trump himself.
God.
Look, for example, the brother Yusuf Salam. You know, Yusuf Salam was one of the Central Park of young brothers who was taken to jail. I was blessed to support him. I live in Harlem. He's now my councilman. What did Brother Trump say about Brother Yusuf? Death penalty,
okay, you made
not
comments,
even a fair trial. I want a fair trial for Trump. I want a fair trial for Trump. Did he want a fair trial for that black brother? No. That's racism, too. It cuts across the board, Brother Sean.
You're talking to the wrong person here. I don't rush to judgment. I'm the one that says everyone...
Yeah, he doesn't rush to judgment, Hannity Job doesn't. He's so slow to judgment, he's not even aware that Nitwit Nero's daddy got arrested at a Klan rally in Jamaica, Queens, and that he was in full Klan regalia. But I'm just happy somebody else is talking about it. Good God. It's Titanic this Tuesday. Well, Judge Aileen Cannon, overseeing the documents case down in South Florida, had a hearing today, and she said she would make a prompt ruling, you know? It was all about how classified materials are supposed to be handled and viewed. And any lawyer who represents him is going to have clearance to view the classified documents. So Judge Aileen Cannon says, I'll get to it pretty quick. Which means she's still trying to figure out a way to do a number on behalf of the guy who gave her a job that she was never qualified to hold. And then something from Flavio. I saw this earlier. The cruelty is the point. This, of course, comes from the state that is under the authoritarian wheel of Greg Aspott. Flavio says, it's the So Christian of You department. The Houston Chronicle has an absolutely stunning report charging Texas state troopers with carrying out acts intended to kill or injure asylum seekers. It comes after the Texas Department of Public Safety strung miles of razor wire along the shores, the banks of the Rio Grande, and even more controversially, floated a line of deadly razor wire-wrapped barrels in the river itself, all meant to deter asylum seekers from attempting the swim. There was no doubt of the fact that the razor wire would maim or kill people, who nonetheless, fearing for their lives behind them, had no choice but to go forward. They're in a climb-or-die situation. And then somebody let the, well, there's more cats in more bags, let the cat out of the bag. And the Houston Chronicle got hold of an email from a trooper with the Texas Department of Public Safety complaining to his boss that officers who were assigned to the traps in Eagle Pass, Texas, quote, have been ordered to push small children and nursing babies back into the Rio Grande. Yes, yes, that culture of life, the Republican Party. According to the email, and this from the Houston Chronicle story, a pregnant woman having a miscarriage was found late last month caught in the wire, doubled over in pain. A 4-year-old girl passed out from heat exhaustion after she tried to go through it and was pushed back by Texas National Guard soldiers back into the river. A teenager broke his leg trying to navigate the water around the wire and had to be carried by his father. The email, which the trooper sent to a superior, suggests that Texas has set traps of razor wire-wrapped barrels in parts of the river with high water and low visibility, and it says the wire has increased the risk of drownings by forcing migrants into deeper stretches of the river. Well, it's not like that wasn't what they intended to do. Seeking for a loophole, Texas Department of Public Safety Director Stephen McCraw, as well as Greg Aspott, say that, no, we're trying to stop smuggling. We're not trying to injure migrants. It's patently untrue because, well, they're injuring migrants. The Post at Daily Coast, the diarist there says, Texas is rapidly becoming a failed state. Hi, Florida! Hi, Alabama! Hi, Mississippi Stan! Hi, Louisiana Stan! Hi, Tennessee Stan! Hi, Arkansas Stan! Hi, Oklahoma Stan! Failed states, the Confederacy, maggot states. But God, don't they have their hands out for that sweet, sweet federal money from places like California and Oregon and Washington and Illinois and Michigan, Minnesota, Pennsylvania, New York, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, New Jersey. Yeah, they do. The diarists saying Abbott's plan to snag and drown asylum seekers before they can sully his precious Republican state with their presence has definitely launched him back into the lead as the most odious and performatively evil of state leaders. Texas officials are now eagerly embracing murder, which might be one of the few ways they could ever have topped their support for an attempted coup. Which is, oh, so very true. So that's the filler obster. We are entering the second hour of the program, trying to at least raise enough money to support last Tuesday's program. And as promised, I have on the line right now, I know it for a fact, my dear friend, Stacy Pace. She is a certified nurse practitioner. She is an angel to the people she treats and who need her. And as I noted at the beginning of the program, she is strong and tough and smart because she's got to be able to work in a toxic environment like Mississippi Stan. I love her to pieces. And so it is my pleasure to introduce you all. And by the way, Stacy told her community about this conversation taking place. So if there's anyone listening who's never heard this program before, feel free to run over and introduce yourself at headon.live, headon.live. Pop into the chat room there, say hi. There's folks waiting who would love to meet you. And I like to think it is because it is a safe space. And you're always welcome in the community. And so with no further ado, hey, Stacy.
Hello. Oh, goodness. What an introduction.
Well, I mean, it was all true.
All right. I thought she was trying to butter me up, but I'll take it.
No. I meant every word of it. So how are you? Busy day? Are you melting in the heat and humidity of southern Mississippi?
All it is sticky here. That's the word. That is it. It's hot and sticky.
Not smoky?
Honestly, I haven't gone outside. I have avoided the outside.
Probably wise on your part. We got the smoke here. I drove through it from Tennessee all the way back here to West Virginia yesterday. The air stunk and burnt, and my eyes stung. You know, it's not good for you unless it's a barbecue.
Well, night. Yeah, the reason that the air around here stinks is just the bigotry. But what can you do?
Yeah. So. Let's let people get to know you a little bit better. Tell us about the clinic and how long it's been going. How long it's been a going concern, and why y'all do what you do.
Okay, all right. As succinctly as I can put it, we are crazy people. Apparently, we decided about 4 or 5 years ago, my husband and I, to open a transgender serving clinic. We only serve trans people at our clinic. So for all the cis people out there, I'm sorry, we don't serve your kind. But anyway, so we're in Mississippi.
the your kind makes it art.
Oh, it's interesting to be able to say something like that because I have so many patients who have gone to regular primary cares or specialty clinics, and they have been turned away. And so, you know, cisgender people just have a little bit more options for care, which is wrong, but you know, so we reserve our space only for trans people. And whenever we decided to open the clinic, we were looking around Mississippi at the healthcare hellscape that is this state, and just trying to decide on which of the very many issues to focus on for building up our own clinic. We, of course, wanted to make something that was impactful to the Mississippi community, but we were also just kind of, you know, just at a loss. Like most people, we've always worked, you know, for other people, you know, and so we'd never had our own business. So we just kind of sought opinions out of the community around us. My best friend, Doug, who is of the LGBT community, had mentioned, you know, oh, why not check out the LGBT community? We always have needs over there. And we're like, yeah, that's a good idea. And we went over to the Spectrum Center, which is a local nonprofit here in Hattiesburg that does a lot of good for our state. And they had, you know, a lot of classes, support groups and everything going on over there. And, we went and talked with them and they said, hey, you know, maybe you should come to one of our trans 101 classes because, you know, then we'll have, you know, some trans folks there because they have like some special needs that the rest of our community just doesn't experience. And we're like, okay, cool. We went there and in all of my naivety, you know, we go there and we're like, hey, everybody, we're going to, you know, create a clinic and we're looking at maybe focusing it on the, LGBT community. And, you know, we're looking at what are your healthcare needs? What would you want a clinic like ours to offer? Any specific services or anything? You know, at the time we were thinking about, you know, just a primary care clinic, but marketing it just for the LGBT plus community. And, you know, they were, you know, all the trans people that were just like, I mean, you know, we, primary care is great and all, but what we really lack here is, you know, access to hormone therapy. And with, you know, my naive mind at the time, I literally thought, and I said out loud, oh, you don't just go to your regular doc and say, hey, I'm trans, let's do this. And they were just like, you're an idiot. So anyway, I mean, they were kinder than that, but that's how I felt whenever they were just like, no, nobody does this. What are you, kidding?
You don't, yeah, so you don't know our reality, do you?
Right. Exactly. So, I mean, I do tend to focus more on, like, I see positive, but that turns into rose-colored glasses in some situations, which drives my husband insane. And my rose-colored glasses in this situation were that everybody gets health care. And I couldn't see why in the world anybody wouldn't be able to just say, hey, you know, whatever. And, you know, maybe their regular doc might not know how to do it, but they would easily, in my mind, be able to refer them on to someone else. And so I was quickly disabused of that notion, as was my husband. And so we got to researching, you know, trans care in Mississippi, which was a very short research because there was not really much going on. There's a couple of pockets in the state that do offer trans care. There's nothing then and there's nothing now that markets, you know, specifically just to the transgender community that serves only them and is only for them. And so we said, well, this looks really interesting and fun and impactful. And, you know, this, I think this is it, you know? So we started planning around it and trying to see, you know, is there any kind of, you know, special training you have to have? Do you have to have a certain degree, whatever? And no, you know, now I do recommend that you get some training, you know, but there's, you know, there's this myth out there that you have to go to an endocrinology office to be able to get HRT, and that is just not the case. So anyway, we researched, we learned, we reached out, we mentored with other people across the country who had been doing this already just to get their take on things and a little bit of input. And just went from there and started, you know, learning how to register a business, establish a business and everything. That part has not been near as fun as the actual trans healthcare we've been doing. But anyway, so that's how we started and got to where we're at. And now, you know, we're serving hundreds of patients across the state, and then others who, you know, drive into one of our licensed states, which currently include Mississippi, Arizona, Colorado, and New York. Although right now in Colorado and New York, we're not actively advertising that we serve those areas, because we can't prescribe testosterone into those areas right now because of the controlled substance stuff. But anyway, so that is kind of where we are right now. It's been an adventure, and we get loads of fun death threats and hate mail and all that. And, you know, it's just the bee's knees.
One of my favorite phrases from days gone by, the bee's knees. So, I don't suppose you would have brought any hate mail with you, would you? I because I've seen you read some of them on your YouTube videos.
Oh my goodness. I probably have a couple. Like, I save them on my phone until I post them. Like, I screenshot from their emails or, you know, Facebook messages and stuff that we receive. So, you know, like, let's see, what have I got here?
Are these the kind of things
this is just a crazy.
Are these the kind of things that you call the local constabulary and say, y'all? And would the local constabulary even do anything if you did?
So, we've been in contact with local law enforcement and, you know how to get in contact with our, you know, FBI and everything like that. But the thing is really that, unless something is like super specific and direct, I mean, there's not really a whole lot that they can do about it. I mean, if someone gets on our page and says, you know, y'all should be dragged out in the street and shot. Well, I mean, that really sucks to read that, but
it's
also
just
it's not
Mississippi.
A direct enough threat.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not.
You all should be horse wheeled.
To act on.
Yeah. Sure.
Pretty much. So, yeah. They're not enough to act on. So, while we know the avenues that we could take, you know, it's just whatever. So anyway, I just pulled up my Facebook page for the clinic because, you know, that's where I post a lot of these at. I mean, like, most of them, they're very boring for the most part. You know, they'll just say something like this idiot, Robert Dean, they need conversion labs or a lobotomy, you know, and I smack right back at them.
Sounds like you've had your lobotomy.
Definitely. But I mean, you know, these people, I really think that a lot of these people, most of them are, what appears to be men. A lot of them have a very similar profile picture, which is, you know, they have the shades on and it's like kind of from the side because, you know, you're super cool with your shade.
Are they posing with a fish? I get a lot of pictures of men posing with fish.
Now, we don't get very many fish, so that would be nice because at least then there would be a fish in the picture instead of them, but no.
Nice bass,
so,
buddy.
Exactly.
I'm
yay.
Sorry.
But, you know, I think that a lot of these guys are just, I mean, honestly, they're just sexually frustrated because what had happened was they're probably surfing the web looking for trans porn, and what happens is our clinic pops up for them. And then they get mad because someone might think they're gay or something. You know how these just weird people react. Because, I mean, we get contacted by folks who think that we are a dating service. How?
What?
Whatever. We've had people, oh, you don't even. So here's a fun, quick story for you. I had someone sign up for an appointment, and, you know, we have some kind of screening questions whenever they, you know, start filling out their questionnaire. And I was just like, some of these are just kind of weird answers. They didn't quite fit. They weren't exactly wrong, but they also didn't fit. And I thought, well, maybe it's because we get fake appointments. Sometimes people prank us or whatever. So I thought, well, maybe that's the case. So I sent them a message through our little messaging app. And I said, hey, just wanted to clarify a couple of these things. Well, anyway, long story short, the person wrote back and they were like, I want testosterone therapy because I'm a guy. But I thought that since y'all see a bunch of trans people, that while I was there, you know, I mean, I'm into trans chicks. So two birds, one stone. And I was just like, no, you're just creepy. You're super creepy.
Dear penthouse, I never dreamed that I would find a date. Oh, no. I just got a note from our buddy Steve in New York saying hate mail format. Let me guess, one or more of these, all caps, one long run-on paragraph, misspellings, using your and your interchangeably, using there interchangeably.
Mm-hmm.
The southern verb tense that includes the present version of the verb with the word done in front of it, as in done gone.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, they do have a type. Yeah, and I can goon on this kind of southernness because I'm a southern girl. I mean, West Virginia, Alabama, all below the Mason-Dixie line, all behind the corn pone curtain, Stacy. But Emilio just said, "Is this secret trans date? Is this secret transdate.com?" Emilio, you don't know. Wait, this is a clinic, sir. This is a Wendy's. All kidding aside, I mean, you don't have to go to an endocrinologist. You know, I started and. I bless their names every day. I started with Planned Parenthood. They saved me.
Mm-hmm.
But you were kind enough to give me some guidance. I was never going to go anywhere in my transition as long as I was on those patches and pills, both of which are just nuh-uh. And so I'm a happy little self-injector every week now. Thursdays are what I like to refer to as Stabby Stabby Day.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a world of difference, and we deal with this kind of thing, we try to educate ourselves. But there's a world of difference between hormone replacement therapy for trans women and hormone replacement therapy for trans men. And I am not ignoring the non-binary; I'm just using that as the bookends on the spectrum. And you mentioned that testosterone. You can't prescribe in certain states because it's a controlled substance. You mean like cocaine? Like cocaine and heroin are controlled substances? Are there trans dudes out there snorting rails of tea?
There are probably cis guys out there doing that. That's why it's been labeled as a controlled substance, because it is an abuse potential. Rating is basically it. In Mississippi, anyway, it's considered a Schedule 3, which means it's at a reasonably high risk for abuse. But part of why we can't prescribe into Colorado and New York right now is, one, we don't have DEA licenses in for those states. You have to have one for each state that you're prescribing into, and they cost about $900 a piece. And, we are a very small local company here in Mississippi, so we have not been able to kick that up as of yet, because we try to keep, our costs as low as possible for our patients. And then there are all sorts of rules and regulations that surround prescribing of controlled substances, depending on the state that you're going into. Certain states, and currently the federal government, but I'll get to that in a second, but certain states require an actual in-person visit. And then later you can do like video chat visits, before you can prescribe a controlled substance. And so, obviously we're not in Colorado, so we can't really do a lot about the in-person thing right now. Same thing with New York. And then, like I said, the different states have different rules. The federal government has a law that was suspended during COVID that allowed the prescribing of controlled substances certain schedules, without an in-person visit. And so that opened up. That's actually why you see such widespread large companies like Folks and Plume out there able to prescribe to multiple states. They are much larger nationwide type companies, or mostly nationwide type companies, that are licensed in all those states for DEA prescribing. And those, you know, while those laws were suspended during COVID, they could just prescribe into a state and, you know, not worry about it. We chose not to expand during COVID because we were concerned, right, that once the pandemic ended, they would roll back that rule. And they sort of kind of have, they haven't locked it in place yet because there was a whole thing with, they put it up for public commentary where you're going to talk about, you know, or take in public comments about whether or not they think that, you know, the newly proposed, Ryan Hate Act is, you know, kosher with the entire nation or not. And I think there was something like 20,000 comments. So the DEA has its work cut out for it, trying to go through all those comments and see what people have to say about their proposed rules about controlled substances. That I believe the last thing we heard, they were supposed to be hopefully finished revising something by November. I don't know. I could be wrong about that. It seems to change quite often. Anyway, we chose at the time not to expand into, you know, multiple other states because we were just like, what happens if we do that? We start seeing people that are on testosterone, and then all of a sudden that law slams back in place and we have to just, what, cut them loose? That seems extra cruel. You know, I can't imagine. I mean, it's kind of like what happened with our Florida patients. We were able to see Florida patients, but of course Florida went batshit recently. And so, you know, we couldn't do that at all. One, they required in person. Two, they said that nurse practitioners and physician assistants are apparently were just not smart enough to provide gender affirming care. So now it's restricted to MDs and DOs only. Along with a slew of other rules and regulations and paperwork that these physicians are going to have to complete along with the in-person visit. It is insane. But anyway, it's kind of a whole involved thing as to why we don't prescribe controlled substances in some of our licensed states as of yet anyway, because, again, we're just two providers. We can't, you know, we can't really cover a ton of states, and so we can't really, like, and we can't justify, like, the added expenses, which would then, you know, be passed along to our patients and, you know, in our clinic costs. And like I said, we're very conscientious about what we are charging people and what we're asking them to do. You know, most of our patients here in Mississippi are uninsured, or their insurance does not cover jack shit for trans care, and so we have tried to navigate around finding, you know, low-cost labs that you can get out of pocket, you know, where is the lowest cost medications that you can get from pharmacies. You know, it is a lot more work than just slinging hormones out the door. So anybody that thinks all we do is sit around and sling hormones out the door, that is not it. This is part clinic, part advocacy, part labor of love, and a whole lot of paperwork dodging.
And no small amount of hand-holding.
Oh, yeah, you know. Hey.
I mean, it's not easy. Oh. And by the way, I just I want to take just a moment here, Stacy,
yeah,
and say hi to somebody, because I have a new friend, mm-hmm, and it was an absolute joy to meet her. It just, you know, at a distance, mm-hmm, you know, just messaging back and forth. And, you know, hi. But hey, Leanne. Hey, girl. We've had a blast getting, and you know, getting to yeah, know each other and comparing notes and everything and talking about, mm-hmm, trans girl stuff. But uh-huh, you know, you said a moment ago, and this is deadly serious stuff. I mean, we clown around and we joke because, mm-hmm, we kind of have to. You deal, right, with things I did. You deal with a number of the same things I deal with, only coming from a different place. It has been hard over the last 2.5-3 years to read every day the steady stream of hatred. I mean, it's not a philosophical, oh, yeah, difference. It's hatred. It's I want you people to die hatred. And I've gotten some of it. I probably haven't gotten nearly as much as you have with the clinic. But I've got, and it takes a toll. And to be there, as I said at the beginning of the program, to be there in the heart, the beating heart of this hatred, has got to take an existential cost. And you said a few minutes ago you didn't want to be prescribing testosterone and then have the rules change and leave your patients hanging out to dry. But by virtue of the actions of the wise gentlemen, you know, including including Mississippi Governor Colonel Taint Reeves. Can't imagine naming your son Taint, but you know.
Oh man.
You literally had you had patients who were adolescent trans kids legally taking hormones and blockers through your care. Tell people, please, a little bit of what it felt like to have to look at these kids and say, you're on your own. Because you do. They banned care. And the care has not been enjoined, has it? Or the ban has not been enjoined.
It's so... I have to find a way to talk about it without crying. It's not a topic that I like talking about a lot. My husband, Lee, he is the one who was the provider for those who were trans youth. I know everybody out there, I don't expect you to know a whole lot about like nurse practitioners and our scope of practice, but I was trained as more of like internal medicine, adult, healthcare. And, you know, my husband was trained as a family practitioner. So he, you know, could see all ages. And so we decided he would be the focal point for seeing trans youth. And we did. And, you know, it's just amazing, like, what their parents would say about how their kids' entire personalities just opened up, blossomed, turned a light on, you know, as soon as they're, just the first appointment. They didn't even have to be on hormone therapy yet. Just having the first appointment, you know, seeing that light come on that, oh, my God, someone's listening to me. Someone's actually taking me serious. Are you kidding? You know, and, you know, seeing that and then seeing them, you know, start hormone therapy or blockers, whichever the case may be, you know, as is appropriate for whatever their needs are, you know, it was like seeing kids come alive. You know, parents that previously said, you know, I didn't know what was wrong with my kid. They just stay in the room. They're very recluse. They don't want to do anything that they used to like doing. And most of it's because they hit puberty and now they have parts of their body that are growing and doing things that are completely just anathema to what they are experiencing in their brain. And it freaks them out. And so being able to offer this service was just amazing. And so then comes in, you know, everybody wants to shit on trans. And that's basically what it was. And, you know, Mississippi's version of that was, let's shit on trans youth first. And I mean, as soon as Alabama had done it, we saw that curtain might be closing on us as well. You know, there's not a whole lot, as you can imagine, of resources in the South to refer people out to ahead of time. And whenever that bill went up, we fought against it. We drove to Jackson. We spoke with, you know, a senator in person who was the one who was presenting the bill and everything. And all of that turned out just to be worthless. They had no intention of listening at all. Like, nobody up there was interested in what actually happens to these kids. They're all just frothing at the mouth for some reason to put themselves into the spotlight as some sort of child hero.
May I suggest that the reason they were frothing at the mouth was because the checks cleared? All of these efforts are driven by the Family Policy Research Council Foundation for Jesus, right? They've been caught red-handed. You know, they've said in their email threads that have been leaked that they're going to start with the kids, but their goal is the complete eradication of all gender-affirming care for everyone in the United States.
Right.
And since you have, I mean, you touched on it some, Stacey, but since you have brought it up, I've talked about a lot of this on this program, but mm-hmm. I want people to hear from someone who sees it on a daily basis or saw it on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
What the actual risk is to, and we're not, you know, one of the lies they tell is, you know, they're doing gender affirming surgeries on 5-year olds. Well,
oh my God, yeah, I know.
I mean, with trans kids, they aren't. But of course, the law in Mississippi, the law in Alabama, the law in Tennessee, the law in West Virginia mm-hmm. has a specific exception in it that allows parents to have surgeries performed on infants who are incapable of consent to change their natal genitalia.
Yep.
And they, mm-hmm. at the same time, they bark and they grunt and they bray about genital mutilation. But it's okay if parents do it to a newborn. And, you know, this is a moment where you bring in things like circumcision, which is of AMABs, assigned male at birth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, none of these good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christians bat an eye at that genital mutilation, because it's for Jesus. But they have but they have a hissy if a kid needs time, you know, a 12-year-old, for Christ's sakes, needs time to sort out who they are and keep puberty from absolutely trashing their body. And mm-hmm. I know a little bit about that. I mean,
yeah.
You know who I am. You know how old I am.
Mm-hmm.
6 feet.
I won't tell.
I'm 29. 6 feet two, linebacker shoulders. God, snowshoes for feet. And it's all because I was compelled at the time that I grew up and was dealing with that. I was compelled to let my body be wrecked by testosterone. Wrecked.
Yep.
And the same thing goes for trans guys whose bodies are being wrecked by estrogen, progesterone, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But tell people, please, because this is a very affirming and loving and caring audience. And it's not even an audience, it's a community. We interact. Right. And I want people to have accurate, truthful information about who and how these kids are. Can you touch on that some, please?
Oh yeah. So these kids, I mean, I call them kids because I guess I feel old, but I mean they're teenagers, you know. You know, they started hormone therapy with us and everything. Like I said, I mean, it's almost like magic how they feel better. They open up, they're able to actually enjoy the life that they have. However much anyone enjoys their teenage years, whatever. But, you know, and then whenever all this started happening, we started having to send out, you know, messages to their parents, to let them know, hey, this could be coming down the line. You know, we're watching it very carefully, but we want to get together, you know, some resources. And I mean, we had other organizations reach out and help, you know, the Spectrum Center and ACLU and HRC, of course, are all, you know, gathering resources so that, you know, whenever, if it happened and it did happen, that we would, you know, have places that people could go to, because the way they wrote the law was so ambiguous that we were advised at the time by an attorney that after the law went into effect, which would literally be as soon as it got signed, there was no like waiting time or anything, it just got signed and it's in law. We were advised not to communicate at all with any youth. It just to completely cut off communication because of the wording of the law that says aiding and abetting. But it didn't define what aiding and abetting was. And so we just were like, okay, so we have to get ahead of this. And so we started sending out all the resources and everything and keeping our eye on it. And whenever they said, you know, okay, it's passed and it's going to his desk to sign, obviously he was going to sign it. So we sent out, you know, final messages and, you know, we had sent referrals and everything prior to this. Of course, we weren't that, we didn't have those kind of rose colored glasses. We sent referrals if needed, or, you know, some people moved, you know, some people picked up and moved their entire life, but not everybody has that kind of resource or ability to do that. I mean, these kids were crushed. It's not like, oh, I didn't get to go to the high school dance. It was literally the lawmakers in this state want me to suffer. They can look in the eye and not care about my suffering so long as they either get their paycheck or whatever it is that they care about. They certainly don't care about kids. Just one example really sticks with me. I had a kid, they were 16 and a half or so when they started emailing. This was prior to the law, so nobody get their panties up their ass about it. I didn't communicate with the youth after the law passed, whatever. Prior to the law passing, probably about a year before, I had an email to the clinic saying, you know, that this person is 16 and a half, working on, you know, coming out to their parents, but they really loved that our clinic existed and they really hoped that they could, you know, come and start care with us. And it wasn't, you know, I don't know, 6 or 7 months later, I got another email from them saying, still working on it, but it's looking good. You know, I got in with a therapist and she's really helping me, you know, decide my goals and, you know, all the good stuff. And then a couple months later, they wrote back, and I don't know. I mean, some youth are, you know, more able to take things like this than others. But this person wrote to me right after we found out that, you know, it's going to his desk to sign, and they the email they sent was very short. It just said, I saw that the law is going to pass that would prevent me from seeing y'all. But I want you to know that when I turn 18, because I will sign up for an appointment immediately after. Please don't worry about me. I can live until I'm 18. Oh, what Jesus. The fuck?
Oh, Jesus, Stacy.
What the fuck? Why? Why do I have to get letters like that?
Because there are some really vile, hateful Republicans who are openly engaged in a genocide.
Yeah.
And they're aiming it at children.
And for those listening, I saw them on their 18th. They're now a patient. So fuck all those haters out there.
Yes. And I will fuck every Republican in the state of Mississippi, the state of Alabama, the state of Georgia, the state of West Virginia. You know, I don't know if you know this. I don't know if I told you this. But, I mean, you know I was a candidate in the primary in 2022 for my House district. Well, in the district next to my district, there was a candidate who had a really good chance of winning. His name was Elliot Pritt. And I'll say his name. He had a really good chance of winning because the Republican incumbent turned out to be a Republican, a dirty little perv. So Elliot Pritt was actually the only Democrat to win a seat and became a member, one of the 10 member minority in the West Virginia House of Delegates. When the vote on trans care for minors came up in the West Virginia House of Delegates, there wasn't much the Democrats could do about it because there was only 10 of them.
Right.
And so Elliot Pritt, who had looked me in the eye and said, I will always, because he's a teacher, you see, of adolescent children. He said, I will always stand up and speak out for every child. And that means trans kids, too. And I said, well, you have my support.
Oh, okay.
Well, when the vote came for the trans medical ban for minors, he voted with the Republicans to ban it. And then promptly announced that he, too, was a Republican.
Wow. What a surprise.
Yeah, this is the kind of shit eaters these transphobic legislators are. And so,
yeah.
I know a little bit, but I can't imagine the heartbreak and the tears you have shed. I started puddling up here when you were talking about that one former patient, current patient now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so glad they had the spiritual resolve and the energy to spare to say I will live. Because we know that the suicide ideation rate in this population is somewhere around 41%, because the transphobes use that 41 the way that neo-Nazis use 88 or 14. It's ironic that 41 is the opposite of 14, you know, Heil Hitler.
Yeah. Well, the younger you get, the higher that percentage goes. It goes upwards of 58% in communities of color.
Yes.
Under 18.
And the funny thing about all those studies is the one thing that's never mentioned is that if the kid has even an iota of support, that number goes down.
Yep. Immensely. Doesn't even have to be a real, like a relative, just an adult in their life supporting them. If they're unrelated, 25-30 reduction in rate of suicide attempts. If it's a closely related adult in their life, it could reduce them 40-50%. And that's not being like supportive, like, okay, let's go and bring you to the clinic. It's just being supportive as in, wow, you're going through an awful lot and I just want you to know you can talk to me about it. It's not this big bullshit that people seem to think that they have to agree with everything. I mean, we won't even get on that topic of agreeing with the existence of trans people, but just agreeing that this poor kid is going through something that they can't understand or fathom, and that they are there as a caring, kind person, not to say, oh, well, you're too young to know anything, but to listen and to empathize. That is what that statistic is talking about. You know, these people right. freak out thinking, oh, I can't possibly accept that, you know, my 14-year-old could actually know more about themselves than I do or whatever. You know, they can't possibly make any kind of decision or what, you know.
And the thing is, as a clinician, you probably know this. I don't know if other people do or not. But you can, and this is no slur on the particular drugs I'm going to mention, but you can't SSRI your way out of being transgender.
Yeah.
You can't sedate your way out of being transgender.
You can't convert,
Yeah, there is one, and we don't even talk about cures, because it's not a disease. It's just a way of being human.
it's a difference of development. Like being left-handed, it's just something that occurs to some folks as they grow up.
It blew my mind the other day when I read a statistic. In the world population, the number of intersex people is roughly equivalent to the number of pure redheads.
Right.
So, you know, what's next? Is the Mississippi legislature going to pass a law that allows parents to dye the hair of their ginger children at 2.5? For Jesus?
For Jesus.
But, you have the real-world experience of seeing these kids, and since you are a clinician, I would prefer that there be a record on this program of somebody besides me explaining that puberty blockers are not permanent and are not hormones.
Correct. 100% correct.
Could you please take that ball and run with it for a minute?
Sure. There's all kinds of different ways that puberty blockade can be induced. Not all are as full on as others. It really depends on how old someone is, what their goals are, what their overall health is. You know, a lot of factors have to be taken into consideration. This is not just a walk in and be, I want to be on puberty blockers. Let me just, throw a bunch in your mouth or in an injection or anything. That is not how it happens for trans youth. Oh, my God. They have so many hoops of mental health therapists and everything they have to jump through before they ever reach that point. Plus, having to convince here in Mississippi before the law passed, having to convince both of their parents to sign off on it. So, you got that major hoop, then you have to have a letter from a therapist, and then you have to be evaluated by a medical provider. You have some pretty significant hoops you have to make it through before you ever get there. All the while, the puberty clock is ticking, and in some cases, it takes people a year or more to get through all of these hoops, especially in the case of parental acceptance. But anyway, whenever someone chooses to go on puberty blockers, should that be the choice, for them at that point in time, what essentially most of them do, not all, but what most of them do is it turns off this function in the brain that causes the signals that are normally sent to the gonads being either testes or ovaries. It turns off that signal, those signal chemicals, signal hormones that tell those organs to produce the sex hormones that would be associated with what they were assigned at birth normally. So, ovaries produce estrogen. They also produce testosterone, but, whatever. We won't get into that. But, and then, testes producing majority testosterone. And so, so on and so forth with puberty. So puberty blockers get in there and they turn off this function, but they do it in a very passive manner, really. It's not like you're jamming something, somewhere and ruining this part of the brain that is going, and then it can't recover afterwards. It's usually going to be a chemical compound that simply replaces what your brain normally is receiving from another part of the brain and stops those other chemicals from being sent. Once you remove this chemical substance, the pituitary gland and the hypothalamus both resume their normal function. It takes very little time for them to kick right back on, and they start sending those same signals down the LH and FSH to the gonads and tell them to produce hormones. So someone can go on these and they can go off of these. And the only thing it does is pause time in regards to physical development of puberty. So if you pause this puberty by taking, say, Lupron, which is a pretty well-known injection that's usually given either once a month or once every 3 months, depending, you give that and you pause puberty. And that way, someone who was, say, assigned male at birth will not develop facial hair or deepening of the voice or the, Adam's apple and things like that. So it pauses it. Now, let's say they were on puberty blockers for a year and unlikely, because, but they suddenly decide, I think I'm just kind of, a very girly guy or whatever it is they decide, whatever's their way to live life. You take them off of the puberty blocker, puberty resumes right where it was before. It doesn't do this permanent damage. Now, people like to say, oh my God, what about, bone health and everything?
Drink your milk.
So while if you did leave someone on puberty blockers for like 10 years, that would be insane and it would be completely just ridiculous. But then you would harm bone health because you essentially took away someone's hormones. This is what cisgender women experience when they go through menopause. They lose their body's ability to produce the levels of estrogen they were used to, which then drop to trash level. And so then, they have a little bit of T and a little bit of E being produced from the adrenal glands, but not really enough to maintain good bone health. And this is what happens to them as they, age. And that's why they have a heightened fracture risk. Now you put that on someone who's younger. We don't leave kids on puberty blockers for 10 years, 5 years, whatever. This is not what is happening. Puberty blockers, generally speaking, are going to be implemented for around about a max of 2 years. Often it's less than 1 year. They're really just meant for, okay, let's pause puberty. Let's give time to assess your goals, and talk to whoever you want to. Talk to your friends, talk to your therapist, talk to your parents, and just kind of get used to the idea of whenever you do transition, if you do choose to transition medically, that is, that the social aspects that are going to follow, because that's what I find are the hardest thing for people to deal with, not the actual physical transition, but the social aspects that follow it, wherein they get discriminated against in all ways, shapes, and forms. But at any rate, pausing puberty doesn't permanently harm someone. It just gives them time. Good Lord.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, of course, the counter argument is always, but look at poor Jazz Jennings. She didn't develop enough. You know what the argument is. It has to do with surgical methodologies. And it, mm-hmm. and it's all fixable.
Right.
But another thought that, and you should probably, I would, in Mississippi as in the other states, these these drugs have not been banned for use on cis kids.
Of course not.
if a little AFAB child assumed female at birth, I like assumed better than assigned, because I was nobody's homework.
That's actually pretty nice. Yeah.
People made a lot of assumptions about me when I was little. My mother assumed I'd be a preacher. Mm-hmm. My father assumed I'd play football. Ha, they were wrong. And a doctor assumed I was male. He was wrong too. But these drugs were used in the cis population long before they were ever used with trans kids. When a 7-year-old little girl gets her period, 7-year-old little girls are not supposed to get their periods. So you put the little cis girl on puberty blockers, and, 4 years or so later, when menarche should actually occur, you take her off of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then she
put, exactly.
And this, the same thing with a 7-year-old boy who develops a James Earl Jones voice and can grow a full.
meat. It's time for dinner.
Yeah, that guy with the mustache, Sam Elliott, the 7-year-old who can grow a full Sam Elliott mustache. Put him on blockers. Yeah. Give the kid a chance to be a kid. And that's all still okay, but cis kids matter. Trans kids don't.
I mean, they
Am I reading this wrong?
Oh, no, you're 100% right. There are, you know, cases of 4- and 5-year-old cisgender children who start developing puberty signs, and so they get put on these blockers, and they're on blockers for way longer than transgender kids would ever be, you know, because they have to wait until it's an appropriate puberty age. So if you're a 4- or 5-year-old getting put on these blockers, and you're not going to be taken off of them until you're around 12 or so, I mean, come on, you know. but we allow that to happen. We won't allow a trans person to have blockers for 1 or 2 years.
Yeah, Republicans don't want to ruin cis child bodies. They're okay if trans child bodies are ruined. And I know
let's say that they do allow cisgender teenage girls to, 16, 17-year-olds to go and get a new set of boobs. They already have the current set, which is pretty new anyway, but they get a new set.
And as often as not, it's because some boy has said something to them about their boobs.
I can't believe that parents would do that either. So what the fuck? I mean, they're growing. They already are growing their own. Why? Unless there's some kind of like super severe deformity that's causing them, you know, mental issues and distress because their body appears different than what they thought it should.
I mean, we're not just talking about breast augmentation. It's legal. Right. It's legal for a cis teen of 16 years old, 15 years old, you know, maybe about to be a child bride, because that's still legal in a lot of these bass-ackwards, nightmare Confederate maggot states. It is legal for her to go, and I'm not trying to be prurient specific or for its own sake, but just to draw a clear distinction as to what the level of discrimination is. That 15-year-old girl can legally go and get labiaplasty because there is, and I, you know, sometimes I hate the fact that I know these things. You know what incels are, and you know what misogynists are, and you know how toxic bro culture is. Well, they will. Apparently, guys don't know that labia minora come in all kinds of shapes and sizes.
Right. But, probably because they never get to see them.
But guys who pay attention to people like Jordan Peterson, Lobster Daddy, or Joe Rogaine, Pink Shrek.
Yeah.
Or little Benny, my dry wife Shapiro, because they're part of the manosphere.
Right.
Those boys think that a girl who has protrusive labia minora is somehow a lower value girl. And so girls will go and get their labia minora trimmed off in order to please some manosphere boy child. And again, Republicans have no problem with that. Because most of the Republican men probably think the same way. That, or, you know, being Christians, they do it in the dark with the lights out, and they've never, you know, seen a vulva. it's all a Monty Python skit, you know. Does she walk? Does she go? Does she? I. What's it like? Yeah. Because the end of that skit is like Eric Idle looking at the poor guy and going, "What's it like?"
Yeah. Oh my dear God.
Do you expect a further onslaught? You know, now that they've done all they can to hurt trans adolescents. Do you expect a further onslaught to try to hurt your adult patients?
I mean, I plan for the worst. I hope for the best. I think it would be naive to say that, you know, no one's ever going to come for adult care. I tell my patients all the time, I feel like Mississippi is fairly lazy in its bigotry and that it seems to wait for other states to do bigoted things before it does. Because, I mean, we already have so much here that I guess we're like, oh, we're full up. But I think that it will probably hit other states before it hits us. But like I said, I mean, I think that someone will try. I honestly have no idea the success rate of that, because they're just, you know, I never would have thought that they would get rid of Dobbs, but they did. So whenever I say something like, I just can't see how you could remove healthcare for an entire group of people, then I'm like, well, I don't know.
I mean, they tried it in Oklahoma, Stan. And it is still part of the agenda of the Family Policy Research Council Foundation for Jesus.
Right.
Because their plan is a wholesale genocide.
Right. Well, their plan is also, you know, get rid of anyone who's not pristinely white and, you know, subservient to men. So, I mean, their whole agenda is just get rid of anyone who's, you know, not a cis white male. And then there will be a few chosen women who are super special, I'm sure, who can hang around. Those people are so wackadoodle. So, I mean, like I said, I think they, you know, someone somewhere will get paid a lot of money to put forth an adult ban bill, I'm sure. And I don't know. I mean, it's for me, I don't have a head for politics at all. To me, it seems like an adult ban would be more of like a signal fire of, look at me, look what I'm willing to do in public, knowing that it will be defeated because it's asinine to remove health care for an entire group of adult type people. But like I said, I also can't discount the fact that I've seen a lot of crazy things politically lately that I just, a normal thinking person, I don't know how you can follow it.
Yeah. So there's so much that I wanted to get into, and we've covered a lot of it. Can I ask, I mean, this conversation is taking place within the universe of HIPAA, and I understand that, and I know you do very well. So specifics are, you know, as to people, are a no-no. But because you're one of very few outlets for this in Mississippi,
right,
can you say how many patients you have?
Oh, I don't want to say.
Okay, that's fine. But you know,
I'm afraid sometimes, like, I get asked that a lot. And an honest to God truth is I actually don't know the specific number. So I can honestly say I don't know, because we stopped counting a long time ago. And the reason that I'm always kind of hesitant to say anything about the actual numbers is because I feel like around this area of Mississippi, people just don't think of trans folks as being a large number. You know, according to, you know, whatever website I went on at one point in time, it said, you know, the population of Mississippi was about like 3 billion people or something. And, you know, if trans people were even just 0.5% of that, then that would be a possible trans population in the state of Mississippi of around about 15,000. You know, and I feel like if you throw numbers like that out, then people get scared because they're like, ah, trans army or whatever. but like whenever I think of, you know, what people think of our clinic, most people don't think of our clinic, which is actually pretty good. you know, because I think if they thought or knew, how many patients that we see, that they would be like, holy shit, this is actually a problem we need to get into, and solve. Whereas I think while we're kind of, in the shadows, they just assume that we must only have like 15 people coming here. And so, you know, it's not that big a deal. It's just that weird clinic and, you know, who cares about those weirdos? But as soon as we start throwing around real numbers, we might make it a real problem.
Well, that makes perfect sense, and I hope I was not inappropriate in even asking.
Nah, you're fine.
But, I mean, it's similar here. You know, West Virginia has a population of 1.7 million, but we also have the statistically highest number of trans-identifying youth from, you know, let's see, six mm-hmm. years ago, these kids were 14 to 17. Now they're 20 to 24, and it's a higher rate than anywhere in the country. But even so, at a population of 1.7 million, if we assume 1%, that's still 17,000 people, of which I am one.
Right.
And I always think of those numbers, and I think about, you know, how many of those people are suffering in silence. How many of my sisters, my brothers, my non-binary nibblings are suffering in silence?
Exactly.
And so, you know, because I know for my part, when I finally decided it was ride or die time, it was almost impossible. I begged my primary care provider. Nope. I begged a doctor I knew years and years ago when I tried to transition the first time. And he was like, nah, you know, I'm pretty much out. You know, and he was up in his 80s. He's like, I'm only seeing. And I'm like, yeah, maybe this is a good idea. And I finally found Planned Parenthood. I could, yeah. And if it had not been for them, I don't know if I'd still be alive. Because the dysphoric screaming, the existential bickering in my head had gotten to a point that I was unable to calm it. So, like I said, Planned Parenthood, you know, gave me hope. And if it's like that here, I imagine, you know, you, like you said, you've got, you know, like a couple of other places, but, you know, you're a bigger state than we are. And I can't imagine what it must be to live in Iuka and need to get your and need to get your care, you know, in Pascagoula. For people who don't know,
right?
For people who don't know Mississippi geography, that's a long way away. But I wonder. I did want to. And by the way, you've gotten some notes from our dear friend Jude in the Great Northwest. She said, please pass on to Stacy that the tonal frequency energy she houses is so profoundly refreshing, especially as she resides in Mississippi, but also for the focus of her practice, one of deep compassion coupled with the critical medical care so needed. I shall enfold her in my meditation and hold her from what appears at a distance. From my perspective, we are aligned in peace. Jude. And sent us a quote from her favorite poet, Rumi. Through love, all pain will turn into medicine. This is the path Stacy walks on. A dear and insightful soul she is. Grateful, says Jude, for this interchange.
Goodness. If you will send me a copy paste of that whenever we get off here, I'd appreciate it. I actually save nice things that people say. It's one of my own personal mental health practices is I save the nice comments as well. A lot of people see me post the hate comments on the clinic site, mainly because I think I want to, you know, call out these people, and I think that folks should know who they are, because I have had people see what I've posted on the clinic Facebook page, and they have seen someone that they recognize who's in their friends list, and they had no idea. I do save the kind words as well. And whenever I have had a day where I have been told how I should die or be thrown in the river with a rock around my neck and all this crap, then I read these kind words, these emails that I get and everything. And that was a very, very kind thing she had to say.
Jude is the Horn's spiritual guide. And her soul is finely tuned. Let me just one last thing, because I've kept you on here for a very long time.
It's okay. You can always call me back and we can talk about more raunchy topics.
Quit that. I hope the folks who have tuned in who are new to this have enjoyed the conversation as well, because I have immensely. And if you don't mind me dropping a little hype in our conversation, girls, guys, nibblings, if you do want a safe space to talk politics, culture, what it's like to be alive in the third year of the third decade of the 21st century, this is a place for you. Okay, it really, really is, and you're always going to be welcome here. Because, sister. I kind of wanted to wrap up with Stacy's big trip to D.C., if that's okay. Because I feel like I'm having a brush with greatness. You got to go to the Pride event at the White House.
Am I
wrong in that?
No, you're not.
And wow. What was it like?
So, honestly, the White House has never been on my bucket list. Like, that's never been a place that I was like, oh, yeah, instead of going to South Africa, I would rather go to the White House. Like, that's just not ever been, like, not that I've been to South Africa. If anyone wants to send me, please do. But anyway, so I had never thought about it until we received an invitation for it. And we were just like,
hold on. You received an invitation to it? Get out.
Yeah, I think everybody that came, you had to be invited. You couldn't just show up.
Yeah. Mine must have been lost in the mail. Yep.
I told them. Yeah, but anyway, moving on. Yeah, you had to show your invitation thingy at the gate to the Secret Service to get in. So that was interesting. But anyway, so when we went there, it was originally supposed to be on a Thursday evening at 7 p.m., which would have been very nice because it was hot as ass. And we showed up, and because of those wildfires in Canada, there was a lot of smoke blowing down, and the air quality was rated very poor. And so they said, well, we can't have, this is going to be an outdoor event. We can't have this outdoor event right now with all this crap swirling around in the air. So they rescheduled it to Saturday at 1 p.m., which was hot as crap. So, it was still an awesome event, but it was very sweaty at that point. I enjoyed meeting everyone from all around the country that came. It was such an interesting group of people because there's, I'm guessing, about 1,000 people there. We talked to everybody. We were supposed to bring a picnic blanket for the outside, thing. And so, talking to everybody who was passing by or who put their picnic blanket near ours, and then getting up and just walking around, and I ran into, Dr. Rachel Levine, chatted with her a little bit, ran into, Erin in the morning for, you know, with her news stuff that covers a lot of trans issues.
Yeah, Erin Reed.
On Twitter and TikTok. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as well as her fiance. You know, it was amazing running into all of these people who I had seen on TV, and I'm like, oh, you actually are a real person. you know, and, for me, honestly, like, everybody's always asking, oh, did you get to, you know, meet the president? It's, to me, I was like, push Biden out the way. I wanted to meet Mayor Pete. And I got to meet him. I got to meet him and his husband, Chasen. So that was the highlight for me. But anyway, the, you know, anyone who knows me personally will know I'm not like I'm for any like president or anything. I'm not a very political person, but I have to be, especially now because of all the crazy that's in the world. You know, I'm not somebody who goes around like, I don't know anybody who goes around waving Biden flags, but you know, I've never really been into like listening to presidents speak or, you know, or anything. I'm just like, I always think, well, they're politicians. It's all crap, you know? And it's probably, you know, a good portion of it, you know, I'm sure is, because they're all politicians, but I really did appreciate that they put this together and that, you know, they didn't just cancel it whenever the air quality stuff, you know, got in the way. They moved it, thank goodness, because that would have really sucked since we had to travel all the way up there. But the speech that Dr. Biden gave, you know, right before President Biden was very warm. And I really appreciated, you know, the effort she put into it, to just make people feel welcome, with the event that they had put together. And then, you know, President Biden, following after, I was very impressed, with what he had to say. I understand that, you know, presidents can't just say, or at least they're not supposed to be able to just be like, oh, okay, things will be this way. Let me wave a magic wand and things are my way. Although certain other presidents in the past have certainly thought that that was the way things work. So anyway, I don't expect that, you know, one single president is going to come out and just wave a magic wand and fix everything. However, I did find his speech to be very genuine, in that I really do believe that he does want good things for the LGBTQ plus community. And I think that if we can get things through Congress so that, you know, he can actually sign them, I think he will not hesitate to sign anything that gets put in front of him that will help this community. You know, I think that he will definitely follow through on those type of promises. So it was very eye opening to me, somebody who just doesn't pay attention to politics other than trying to protect my patient, to see this like live in front of me going on. And you know, sorry to ramble. It was so hot also that it was also kind of overwhelming in that respect. But anyway, so I came away with just a very good feeling of just, okay, these two people who have very stressful positions, because you couldn't pay me any amount of money to be the president of this dump country, but whatever. It would be like trying to move into a place that someone had trashed. No, I'm not going to, I just can't deal with that. But they have very stressful jobs and everything. And I look at what they're trying to do, especially for the trans community, which is such a small portion of this country. And I'm just like, most people would completely ignore such a small portion of people, because what political power do they have? What money do they have? You know, I don't know about in other states, but here in Mississippi, the vast majority of the trans population here is very poor. I mean, they get crapped on all the time. People will fire them for being who they are. You know, it's very hard to get ahead here. And so the fact that they chose, you know, to to actually speak out and, you know, try to take some action for this community speaks a lot to me, that they were willing to do that. Because, I mean, I don't know about you, but, like, going out and saying, hey, I love trans people is just not the thing you want to do unless you actually feel that way right now, you know? Because it's just like, I say that because I love this community and I've, you know, we've made it our lifeblood and livelihood here in Mississippi to serve them. But if someone is disingenuous and, you know, looking to score points, I don't really know that that's the kind of thing you want to throw out there, because here in Mississippi, you'll get beat up or shot, you know? So whenever I see people stand up and say things for this very small minority population, it really makes me think a lot more well of them overall. Anyway, sorry to, you know.
Oh, no, no, that's fine. You're not rambling. One of the realities. By the way, you got another little note. Janet wrote in and said, "Really enjoyed your conversation with Stacy. Very informative. She's a firecracker." And Janet, you're right. You're absolutely right. Dynamite comes in small packages, and Stacy, you're TNT. You're C4. One other thing, you know, with all of this legislation, and, you know, it's not just limited to the ban on, mm-hmm. on adolescent medical care.
Yeah.
You know, the athletics bills come out, the bans for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As we've talked off air, I was scared. I was sick and sad and scared when the maggots in the West Virginia Senate introduced a bill that would make it a felony for me to go grocery shopping.
Right.
And I started looking at the map, trying to figure, okay, where do I run? And I cried. I cried. Anybody who lives in West Virginia has a very complicated relationship with this place, and I've talked about it for hours and hours and hours on this program. It's a lot, but it's similar, you know, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, you know.
Right.
Because, you know, you were talking earlier about how the Mississippi legislature is kind of lazy and they won't get around to it until they've been shamed into it by Alabama or Tennessee or Arkansas. And you mm-hmm. sit, they're full up and it's like, oh, we'd love to hate on y'all some more now, but we got a cross to burn.
Yeah.
Jesus.
I mean, I'm not wrong.
No, you're not. But I'm wondering, again, within the parameters we're talking about, do you know people who are contemplating fleeing the state? I mean,
there's... Oh, Lord, I've had so many patients leave.
Already gone.
Yes, we had people leave as soon as the youth ban went into place. And as I go through my patient appointments, you know, people will tell me, I mean, loads of people want to leave, but of course not everybody has, you know, the resources to do so. But we have had a number of patients leave, not like a substantial number enough to, like, you know, half the clinic numbers or anything like that. But more than I thought would leave, because, you know, I figured people would maybe wait around. But I think that the other states up north passing, like, trans refuge laws gave these people the extra push that they needed. Because, I mean, before that, it's just you're running off to another state, and who, you know, how do you know anything's going to be better? But at least some of these states have taken the initiative to help protect people. And, you know, believe me, like, we look around, you know, we always assess our physical safety. And, you know, we do a majority telemedicine, but we do do some in person as well. And we heavily consider going all telemedicine so that perhaps we could then reside in one of these refuge states to protect our physical person. You know, so, I mean, we have to think of this stuff, too. And just, like, it goes back to what I I scream whenever I get messages like from that trans youth, you know, okay, why the fuck? Why do I have to have these kind of thoughts? Why do I have to have messages from people reassuring me that they won't kill themselves? This is not normal. This is insanity that these are the things I have to consider. My husband and I carry guns when we go to clinic. You know, why? What the fuck? Why should that be necessary? We have cameras all around on the outside of the clinic. We have an alarm system. We have a silent alarm panic button. We carry guns. I also have a nightstick because I really think I'd be better off with a nightstick than a gun because I'm not a well-practiced shooter. But hey, all these things, you know, we try to vary the times and days that we're at the clinic so that we're never predictable. We never stay there, you know, alone or whatever. So, and we rarely ever stay after it's dark. All of these things, what the fuck other clinic has ever had, you know, besides abortion clinics, hey. But it's very, I don't even have a word. I don't think the English language holds a word for the kind of just lost feeling that comes on us sometimes whenever we're discussing this, or we're discussing it like in such blasé terms. Oh, ha, 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 you know, someone told me they were going to, you know, blow us up, woo, you know, just stuff like that. It's insane that this is just part of our daily life, that we have to consider these things.
So when they flee for their lives,
mm-hmm.
how do they manage it? Parents picking up and moving bag and baggage to save the lives of their kid. Who wouldn't?
Mm-hmm.
But but Mississippi is a poor state, like West Virginia.
Yes.
I mean, mm-hmm. I can't imagine that flight into the unknown.
We have had people who have left and almost immediately come back because a lot of these trans refuge states are much higher cost of living. Just about anywhere is a higher cost of living than Mississippi, to be honest. You know, so you got people down here who are living off of, you know, $300, $400 a week. You can't do that up there. You just can't. So, you know, a lot of these folks, they go up there and they had saved a little bit, you know, to be able to pay, you know, a rent deposit. And then after their lease is up, they're just completely broke and going in the hole, and we've had people return already. You know, people started leaving at the beginning of this year. It's only the seventh month, so we've already had people who have left and then had to come back because this was the only place they could actually afford to live.
What a horror. What an absolute horror.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes. You are... You, like I said, you are doing the work of the angels, you and your husband. And I just want you to be safe, and I want you to be happy, and I want you to be able to continue doing what you do. I know people have... threats occur on multiple levels, and coming after your livelihood mm-hmm. is part of it. And I just... I admire you for the strength and the perseverance you bring to this, and the life-saving care that you provide to your patients. And I'm kind of at a loss for words beyond saying simply thank you, Stacy Pace. Thank you for being there and knowing you, I know you don't, but at the end of the day, you have an absolute right to go home and say, hey, how many people get to go home at the end of the day and say, I saved lives today? Because you do.
Yeah.
And you have.
It's amazing. It is honestly amazing. It's uncomfortable to me whenever people compliment me.
Well, live it, with it. Sorry.
it just, to me, this is the right thing to do. I don't understand, you know, I don't understand why people wouldn't do this. It's just basic medical care, you know, it just that people should have access to. Why isn't there more? I don't understand. So yeah, when people compliment me, I'm just like, okay. And then I feel like I'm just doing what everybody should do. You know, it's not extraordinary. It's just basic health care. I don't know.
And it's like I said at the beginning, it differs between female to male and male to female. And it feels like there's a lot more experimentation with the male to females because there's different delivery methods and different testosterone blockers. And then there's the, when do I take progesterone or do I not? And there's different delivery methods that way. And over on the female to male spectrum, it's just testosterone, right?
For the most part, there's some other stuff you can add in there depending on, you know, if their cycle is still occurring, which does happen in up to 20-25% of transmasculine individuals who still have a uterus. They can still have a cycle even on testosterone, and so there's some medications that we can give to try to help stop that.
That must be a horror.
And it's so, not a favorite topic.
Oh, I can imagine. I can imagine. Well, just please keep being as awesome as you are. And so, again, give the states where, because, see, that's the other thing. I talk about you get to go home and say, I saved lives today. Someone may be hearing you right now saying, oh, my God, there's somebody. You know, sitting in busted knuckle, not just Mississippi, but, you know, busted knuckle Arizona or whatever. Give the states again where they can find you or where you can treat.
So Mississippi is our main base. We do estrogen and testosterone in Mississippi. We also do estrogen and testosterone in Arizona. The reason why we do in Arizona and not the other couple is we had, for whatever reason, over the past couple of years, we had several patients move to Arizona to where it actually was financially feasible and made sense that we were getting, you know, we already had Arizona patients and then get other Arizona patients to support that cost. And so we are in Arizona for both testosterone and estrogen therapy as well. Colorado and New York is just estrogen therapy because, again, the whole controlled substance thing. And Arizona had much more friendly laws with the whole telemedicine thing. But anyway, so Colorado and New York is also estrogen therapy. And then unless Florida has something major change, I guess we are cut off from serving them for the foreseeable future as long as they keep that ridiculous law in place about in-person visits and nurse practitioners and all that good crap.
And that was that wasn't just nurse practitioners doing trans care, was it? I mean, they fucked over a lot of nurse practitioners.
What you mean?
Well, I mean, wasn't there a little overarching level of bigotry in Florida? I mean, they beat the shit out of telemedicine generally, didn't they?
Yeah. I was going to say you don't have time enough to go into all that, but yeah, they have screwed up a lot of stuff for people who rely on telemedicine, whether it's a business that relies on it or the patient, because I mean, there's so many patients who are rural and have literally no access to even a primary care provider anywhere near them who depend on telemedicine to be able to access any kind of health care. And apparently Florida just feels like people just shouldn't have any health care. I don't know. They're weird.
I mean, that's what you get when you elect a little pompous, self-important fascist prick.
to
the governorship and give him a pet legislature to play with. But Stacey, I've kept you longer than I should have, and I really appreciate your grace in answering all the questions and you know, your forthrightness and your willingness. Again, you're welcome here anytime. And if something's ever absolutely got you on fire, I want to be the first media call you make, okay?
All righty. I will keep you in mind, honey.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. You have a good evening.
Anyway.
I've made you late for
you
supper.
Too. Thank you.
See you, Stacey.
Oh, yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
And that, y'all, was my dear friend, Stacey Pace of Spectrum, the other clinic down in Mississippi. And if you're in one of those states and you need care, you could not possibly be in better hands. I say that without reservation. And I hope the conversation was helpful. Because I realize, you know, while I do bring the topic up from time to time.
When are you going to talk about all that trans stuff, Robin?
It's just my personal experience. And I have a considerable amount of legal training, and I can analyze bad legislation, bad policy. But when we get into the chemistry and the biochemistry and the down-to-earth, real-world impact, Stacy's willingness to discuss it is profound. I don't know another provider who would have given us, not me, us, an hour and a half of her time to just answer questions and try to dispel misgivings and shine light into darkness and push back against all the prejudice, all the bigotry, all the hate that proves to be so entirely exhausting. So thanks. And if y'all tuned in, if you are one of Stacy's friends on the Facebook page or whatever, and you tuned in, thank you. I really appreciate it, and I hope maybe you'll come back and say hi again. Because I want to add more voices to this conversation. Because God knows we need a place to talk. So consider that, if you please. So the program is, what, we got maybe 25 minutes left. And I hope, if you want to talk about what you just heard, or anything else for that matter. The stress line is open. Stacy was on the stress line. If you want to talk about it, jump in. Conversation radio relies on that simple word, conversation. And as you can tell, you know, if you're new to listening or anything, we don't do the hi, how are you, you know, ask your question, get off the air thing. This is a far, far different experience. And, yes, along the way, I will mention that we are $250 from having last Tuesday's show fully funded. And being that far in the hole does not bode well for the end of the month. So if you'd like to help out, that would be great. I'd really appreciate it. As for the rest of the program, like I said, stress line's open. So is the Skype line. If you'd like to connect on Skype, it is Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, Kincaid Horn. Two words made into one. K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. And you can send me a contact request that way. Jude says, Stacy voiced its basic health care, yet for those that walk the dedicated path of understanding and acceptance, it is rare to be included in this unique and necessary interchange. Robin, Stacy is a light. She is. She is. And, you know, she and I sit down and talk every couple of months or so. And we always have a great conversation. She's terribly busy. But the fact that she puts care ahead of everything else makes her indeed a rare gem. Stacy, you're welcome in the chat room any time you just feel like hanging out. Stacy was in the chat room tonight. Isn't that cool? Okay. I wanted to follow up a little bit. I mentioned Judge Aileen Cannon down there in the Southern District of Florida. Where'd it go? Well, apparently, Judge Aileen Cannon wasn't having much in the way of arguments by Nitwit Nero's pettifoggers.
But the trial is just moving too fast. Too fast.
No, Stacy said, wrapping up, about to cook some mac and cheese. Love y'all. Love you too, Stacy. Okay, right or wrong? I've been meaning to ask. This isn't one of those fight me questions. But this is my assertion. Popeyes has the absolute best fast food mac and cheese, period. Like, I need to be eating mac and cheese, but sometimes you just can't resist. Well, hey, thank you. Thanks, Stacy. We're down to 240 to go last Tuesday. Thank you. That's amazing. Of course, I don't have a Popeyes. I have to drive to Withville, Virginia. It's not that far, though. Oh, stop. Right before I started my conversation with Stacy, we were talking about Greg Abbott down in Texas wanting to shove babies and children back into the razor wire that he's had put in the river, the Rio Grande. Meanwhile, since we mentioned Florida several times in the conversation, this, and even this provides a little bit of hope. A federal judge in Florida, Donald M. Middlebrooks, has blistered Florida health administrators because Florida, if you can visualize or imagine the horror, Florida, for all its talk of being pro-life, doesn't give a flying fuck at a rolling donut about kids. And so what Florida does is when kids need complex medical care, they farm it out to managed care providers. The only problem being that those managed care providers have absolute, because free market economics has absolutely no accountability to the state. And Judge Middlebrooks said, families are in a maze almost impossible for parents to escape. He went on and said, Florida is violating the rights of children with medical complexity who rely upon the provision of vital Medicaid services and are trying in vain to avoid growing up in nursing homes. The state of Florida is putting fragile medically at-risk children in nursing homes. Judge Middlebrooks added, the state has refused to engage in efforts to craft any meaningful solution. Well, that's because Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis, the fascist, and his pet fascist legislature, again, don't give a fuck, and have been entirely too busy trying to run migrants out of Florida, get trans people to commit suicide, or at least convict them of felonies for trying to go potty in an airport somewhere. We like to, news outlets like to make sure that people know how long opinions are. So Donald Middlebrooks penned 79, or typed, or his clerk did, 79 scathing pages in an order. He included the testimony of a 19-year-old woman. In her childhood, she spent 4 years at a place called Kids Corner. That's KIDZKORNER. Surprised they didn't have Kids Corner Kindergarten. Maybe they did. Sorry. Someone was near the front of my mind. It's Florida. Kids Corner was actually the pediatric wing of a nursing home in Plantation, Florida. The witness, Jade Quinones, said she was lonely, she was isolated. The people supposed to be providing her care didn't even attend to her basic cleanliness and sanitary needs. She felt fear and panic when her tracheostomy tube became dislodged, and she had to wait for somebody to help because she can't breathe without it. My depression got so bad that I wanted to fall asleep and not wake up. But since being at home, it hasn't been like that. We do spend what may seem an inordinate amount of time talking about the big hot-button Kulturkampf aspects of care in Florida and the outright bigotry, and of course the cruelty is the purpose. But these are the kinds of things that will ultimately be Monkey Up DeKlantis' undoing. Or in a just world, why do I bother? Should. Judge Middlebrooks said, the difficulties facing the children and parents in this case are heart-wrenching. The parents' love for their children is palpable, and their actions are heroic. They jeopardize their own health, employment, and time with their other children in order to care for their medically fragile child in their home. These children deserve equality and freedom from isolation, both as a matter of right and of conscience. Wow. Be nice if he had a case on the trans medical care, adolescent care ban. Because it's the same thing. He said it was overwhelming, the judge did. The evidence of Florida's failings in administering care for kids like Jade Quinones. We're talking about children who can only be fed by tubes that are directly attached to their stomachs, and who can only breathe with ventilators and tubes and tracheostomies. Again, Florida doesn't give a fuck. Because those kids may not be white. Those kids may not be heterosexual. Those kids may not be cis. So, you know, the old saying about Florida being God's waiting room, that doesn't just apply to its geriatric population. It applies to anyone that can't be of any possible use to the Republican Party in Florida. Now, you would think with a scathing order like this that maybe the Florida Agency for Healthcare Administration would say, oh my God, really? Jesus, we've got to do something about this. No. A spokescreep for that healthcare administration agency, and they are the administrator of Medicaid in the state of Florida, said, well, we intend to immediately seek a stay and an appeal, you know, so they can continue neglecting children. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. Oh, well. I mean, isn't it just a basic tenet of fascism that you do everything in your power to eliminate the undesirables, eliminate, erase the imperfect? I mean, there's a playbook out there. And when it comes to fascists, it's a very, very broad spectrum of human beings that fascists think the world would be better off without. So migrants are fleeing. It's hard to get anything built in Florida. The government is neglecting fragile children to death. Major national organizations for people of color, Hispanic people, the LGBTQ community have all issued travel warnings imploring members of those communities to, for the love of God, stay out of Florida. Gay, trans, whatever, black, maybe? Haitian? An EMT in the state of Florida can say, well, I have a deeply held religious belief that prevents me from providing care to you while you're bleeding out on the sidewalk. Say hi to Jesus for me! We had that story earlier talking about Texas becoming a failed state. You know, failed states can appear to be prosperous, but it doesn't make them any less failed. And Florida can appear to be prosperous, and of course, Monkey Up Duclantis is braying and grunting about how good everything is in Florida. Because we're not teaching the critical race theory. And we're not woke. But pretty soon, the cracks are going to expand. And there's no way Florida, or Monkey Up, as he proved in the last hurricane season, is ready for the next one. But I'm sure it will be Joe Biden's fault. And of course, politics being politics, Joe Biden can never say, hey, Jack, I didn't elect your governor. Talk to your neighbors who voted for that little fascist asshole. He's the one doing this to you. Him and all the Republicans in your legislature. If you'd like to have good government, there's only one way, and that's get rid of the Republicans. Because the Republicans would all be terribly, terribly butthurt about it. And one last thing. Oh, for God's sakes. because, as I pointed out, it's almost entirely common that any time you find a bigot of one stripe, it will turn out that they are all the other kinds of bigot, too. Earlier, I mentioned that manly masculine man of masculinity in the manosphere, Ben Drywife Shapiro, who is apparently now tinting his eyebrows, they look like caterpillars, and trying to grow himself a little dysphoria beard, you know, like his hero, Matt Walsh. So guess who, oh, by the way, Stephen New York with a comment. All that trans stuff, Steve says, never stop talking about it because the shit the crazies are heaping on trans people will somebody be somebody else down the road. There was a time when people could have said, why do you talk about that race stuff, or why do you talk about that gender stuff, or why do you talk about that gay stuff? And I'm proud of the fact that I've tried to be an ally in all those areas, all the way back to the beginning of this program. Because I have a fundamental understanding that trans rights are human rights, gay rights are human rights, women's rights are human rights, the rights of African Americans are human rights, brown rights are human rights, Asian Pacific Islander rights are human rights, environmental rights are human rights. Because without people, there ain't no environmentalism. And I'm proud of that. Steve says, the fundamental reason you talk about all that trans stuff is that the haters will always find someone to hate. We need to make sure we see it coming down the pike, because there will never be a time when we can say the issue of civil rights or human rights are settled. The repeal of Roe, all of those anti-LGBT laws, are proof of that. Many of us thought we had won the reproductive rights war or the marriage equality war. We rested on our laurels. The reason you talk about all that trans stuff is that the war is never won, and we have to fight it every day. Oh, and as to the children in Florida, what about the children? Oh, not those children. Right. Thanks, Steve. Now, back to Ben, my dry wife, Shapiro, who is now angry that it's not like there's not a history with these assholes. I remember when Jerry Falwell got all butt hurt over Tinky Winky being purple with a triangle on its head and carrying a purse.
Tinky Winky is an agent of the devil. Purple is the favorite color of all the gays.
Right. Well, little Ben, my dry wife Shapiro, is now pissed off at the new live action adaptation of Disney's, wait for it, Snow White. Because a woman named Rachel Zegler has been cast as the title character. Now, Ben Shapiro is Jewish. But then again, so Stephen Miller. There were people like them in the camps. Oh no, kill those Jews first. I'm one of the good ones. Rachel Zegler is part Colombian and part Polish. She's a hell of a lot more genetically interesting than I am. But, well, in good Nazi fashion, Snow White ain't white enough. Get the hockey puck. This guy gets millions of dollars to say this evil racist shit. Tinky Winky's the agent of the devil, Steve said. Really? If that's true, game over. Jesus won. Hockey puck. Duct tape.
So, they have now decided that apparently every redhead in the Disney universe will...
Wait. Maybe it's unfair. because I struggle with my voice too. But what did they do to Ben Shapiro at puberty? Because he sounds like Mickey Mouse on meth. But he's a masculine man of masculine masculinity.
So, they have now decided that apparently every redhead in the Disney universe will be recast as...
Y'all got enough money to burn a sopping wet herd of sopping wet elephants with sopping wet $100 bills. Will somebody please, for fuck's sake, put a compressor on Benny Drywife Shapiro's mic? He doesn't have to sound like that.
So... They have now decided that apparently every redhead in the Disney universe will be recast as a racially diverse person. And this is how, for example, The Little Mermaid ended up as a person of color. It's something that somebody notices. Basically, if you're a redhead in Disney universe, then...
Because everybody knows mermaids are white.
They'll recast you. But now they're recasting everyone. So they've cast Snow White. Snow White is now going to be played by Rachel Zegler. Okay, now, Rachel Zegler, you may know, again, her name is Snow White. Now, you might consider that...
I think the white part is terribly important to little Ben, my dry wife, Shapiro, who doesn't realize as a Jew that there was a time not that far distant in the history of this country where he wouldn't have been white either. Not white enough. Not white.
Racist, but that's also the name of the actual fairy tale. And in the actual fairy tale, it says skin, I mean, this is from the original 1936 Snow White. Skin as white as snow, right? That is...
Wait, 1936. Help me here. What was going on in the world in 1936? Who did Hollywood have an absolute fetish for making movies palatable to? Because they were shipping movies overseas as well. Oh, that's right. The Third Reich. Who were particularly persnickety about people being white. Und Aryan. Ja, und Yami. So, I mean, once again, little Benny Drywife Shapiro is going... To the primary sources, the 1936 film, oh my God.
From the original 1936 Snow White.
Yes.
Skin as white as snow.
Testify.
Right, that is literally in her neck. That's why she has her name.
In her neck.
So, I guess just to, like, screw with people, they're casting... Rachel Zegler is a very talented person. I'm just... it's weird casting.
Oh, where are you, Tracy? And she clean, too.
You might say. Right, like... I don't understand. There's certain parts that are racially specific. I mean, very clearly so. And they're not going to cast Tiana from the Frog Prince, the Princess, whatever it is. They're not going to recast Tiana as a white lady. They're not going to. Even though
Wait. Frog Prince, Frog Princess, are you having a difficult time sorting out gender there, Benny?
You certainly could, but they're not going to. And we all know why, of course. Well, Snow White is like maybe the only racially specific white princess because it's in the name?
That's not racially specific, Benny. And, well, we know this, but you apparently don't. There's no such thing as race. Race was invented by white colonizers to distinguish themselves from the people whose shit they were stealing. Among whom were, you know, your ancestors, pinprick.
And it's not like... greatly evil if a person is cast as what the part is. It's very strange to me that if you cast Alexander Hamilton as a black person, that's totally fine. But if you cast Martin Luther King as a white person, that is totally unacceptable. Maybe you should cast people as like what the description of the part is. There are certain parts where the person is described as white.
Did it ever occur to little Ben, my dry wife Shapiro, that part of the reason Alexander Hamilton came to the colonies was because growing up in, I think, was it St. Croix in the U.S. Virgin Islands? His parentage was sort of in question. And casting a brown person might have been appropriate. there was a lot of white powder being used, not just among the lady folk, but among the men's too. I mean, it wasn't just the wigs getting powdered, y'all. You gotta cover up the syphilis sores too.
And that's okay. That's not like the end of the world.
It's not the end of the world, but you couldn't tell it to by what Ben Drywife Shapiro is saying. What a fucking moron. Brother Deacon Asa says he sounds like that because he's fucking 12. We need to stop giving these 12-year-olds so much airtime. Yeah. I don't want anybody to sit on the stress line without getting a word in. So before I close the program for the evening, hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Robin.
Hey, Jude. How are you?
Well, I have to give a shout-out to Asa. Yeah, giving 12-year-olds a forum, you know, that kind of resonated. But this is the best time for me to call in because there's only a few moments. And if you would, I would very much appreciate hearing how you connected with Stacy, if you're open to that, originally.
She was kind enough to answer some questions from me about my, what was then not at all good hormone regimen, and she put me on the right path.
And was that prior or after your surgery?
Oh, before.
Oh, before, so it's been, a long connection then.
Because I was on patches and they failed, estrogen patches, they failed. And I was on pills and they failed because I could not get my hormone levels up to cis female range with them. I mean, I was using, at one point, so many of the maximum dose patches that my butt looked like overseas mail. You know, everything but the postmarks and, you know, this side up and use no hooks.
Well, what was the original connection? How did you find her? I mean, was it online or
did she connect with you? She knows people I know. Back when my dear sister Terry was still doing a show, she was on their show and I was like, help me, please.
Mm-hmm.
And so she gave me necessary guidance that changed everything because, you know, now I inject time-released estradiol and made a world of difference.
Mm-hmm. It was just a very impactful program tonight. I started a week's vacation today. I have 2 weeks, and
oh, nice.
I'm sitting on my front porch. Yeah, I'm kind of exhausted and trying to regroup myself, but I really feel and have a sense that, I was involved in part of the chat room tonight. And when, you know, I heard about her being a nurse practitioner, you know, I have friends that have gone through that. It takes a lot of education. And for one to place themselves, you know, their license on the line, I have great respect for that. And I am very moved and I hope to continue or make connections with her. Thanks so much, for offering that aspect, part of the community. We hear so much about that phrase, you know, that phrase, land of the free and home of the brave. You know, it's only reserved for a certain few. But we come along as a consciousness of people that are very diverse, very different from each other, but we still have compassion and love for one another. So tonight's program really has fed me, and it started me off in a direction that, I don't even know what the week's going to be, but I know it's going to be productive. So I want to say thank you. Thank you to you both.
You're more than welcome, Jude. And, Stacy provides such a complete picture of the stark dichotomy of something like an accident of birth, because trans kids and trans adults who live where you live don't have nearly the problems accessing gender affirming care that Stacy's patients do in Mississippi. Not
by
a lot.
Yeah, in Mississippi.
And it's no fault of the individual. It is literally an accident of birth. And in this country of 50 states that are actually 50 petty kingdoms, you can be doomed simply by what state you were born in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it is sobering to think about. And I personally think that within the constitutional framework, the federal government should step in and federalize and exert dominion and control, there's that word, over health care in this country so that bigots can't get their hands on it. You know, just the same way that John Kennedy federalized the National Guard and sent them to places like Mississippi and Alabama and Arkansas.
Yes.
One should not be cursed by virtue of where one is born in this country, if in fact we are the land of the free and the home of the brave. If in fact all people are created equal, and we want to live up to that in this country.
Exactly. I watched a, kind of taking off from the subject, but I watched that an interchange, I think it was out of David Packman's show, and he has a young fellow by the name of Luke that goes into a lot of Trump's, gatherings and such. And he was asking this one older gentleman about Trump. The fellow went on and on about Trump, anything to support Trump. And he said, even if Trump stood on the steps, I'm paraphrasing roughly, steps of the White House, and shot someone and murdered them, I'd still support him. And in that interchange, I wondered, and maybe it wasn't Luke, and I forgive me, because I'm coming to a place of, gaining ground again to just breathe and be away from work and kind of renew myself. But I thought at that moment it would be so important for them, for that reporter to say, murder? What if that person murdered someone in your, what if he murdered someone in your family? That kind of follow-up. So many things are left unsaid. And tonight's program gave a whole different dimension into a woman, a practitioner that's placed herself on the line, that's helped you, which helps all of us because of your program, to move beyond where they feel constricted and negated and, to me, it was really powerful. It was just a really powerful, wonderful interchange tonight. I just wanted to personally thank you, and I know your time is limited, but that's where I reside.
Well, I'm glad you did reach out, Jude. It's always lovely talking to you, dear. And so I am going to close things down and get the upload done.
All right.
And, back at it for prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow.
All right. Well, take good care. And I wanted to, my last thing, I found in part of her vocal tone, Stacey's vocal tone tonight, aspects of Darlene when she calls in. They have kind of the same tonal kind of interchange, that laugh. And so I had a wonderful connection with Darlene during all of that. And I wanted to send out a special hello to Todd, and I wish you well, and thank you so much. Thanks so much, Robin.
Jude, take care, dear. Love you. Bye.
Love you.
And so we will call tonight at that. Thanks, Jude. Thanks to all of our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you so much. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this program in whatever manner you so choose. Tomorrow, we will be more than a week behind trying to keep this little thing on the air. That's been going for 20 years. Tomorrow, the fundraising goal rises to $2,040. Thanks for all you do. Thanks for all you do. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. In the chat room. Really appreciate y'all being there. Genuinely do. Thanks, Roger. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, if you're listening to the podcast, pretty please, like it, love it, follow it, subscribe to it, whatever they call it. Leave a comment. Give us a comment. It helps grow the community. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know. The folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Get your booster if you can. Wear your mask if you're around maggots, because they don't give a damn about anybody but themselves. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, carry it with you, pocket or purse, maintain your social distance. And if a guy with his jacket off who looked the other way at young men being raped by a team doctor at the Ohio State University comes toward you, babbling about, they're weaponizing the government. Well, avoid that gym shorts dude like the plague. Because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.